The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Now, in 1945, at Trinity, which is how I always thought is an interesting name for it, at the 33rd meridian of the Earth, which is the famous Masonic number, Phase 1, or let's say Phase A of Phase 1, happened. On July 16, 1945, when the atomic bomb was dropped, that was them patting themselves on the back going, well, I think we got Phase 1 halfway completed. We know now how to release from the atom energy. From that date, in 1945, from the 1940s and 50s, they've been moving on the second half of that, of how to create from energy matter. We would call it the nanotechnology stuff that's coming in now, right? We see this plotted through, and the symbolism of these companies tell you exactly what they're doing. So, and the other one was silicon, which is another word for what? When you say silicon, you obviously mean computers. Mm-hmm. So the computer revolution, the computer age, and the symbolism. I have another DVD coming on the symbolism of the world.
Are you working with Jordan Maxwell on that one?
Yeah, very much. A lot of my stuff is actually even dedicated to Jordan Maxwell because of this. But certainly the occult agenda of the symbolism used, like the Pentium, and you know, there's a whole, people who get the DVD will see this more than we can go into now.
The Pentium.
The term, the name, the symbolism. You know, the Intel uses the serpent symbol if you look at it very closely. And it's a whole other study in itself about the gateway and why certain terms are used, and why the five-pointed star is used, and what computers are, basically. Yes, they make our life easier and so on, but they were not created for us. They were created by the Pentagon. The Pentagon itself is controlled by the Tudor dynasty of England. The Tudor dynasty hasn't gone anywhere. They just changed their names a little bit. But this force that was behind John Dee are funding the U.S. Pentagon. In fact, the U.S. Pentagon, that shape, was designed by occultists. John Whiteside Parsons, who was a member of a secret society called the OTO, helped in the formation of it. The ceremony of commemoration, the ceremony of opening of the Pentagon was on September 11th. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, and the layout of Washington, D.C. is an entire study in itself. I got a whole chapter in the book on that. But the layout of Washington, D.C. and many other cities of the world based on sacred geometry. Because the pact, why I call them macrobes, these fourth dimensional oversouls that John Dee connected to, the word macrobe is important because it explains this. If we were told, before the advent of the microscope, that there was all sorts of microscopic life forms, you know, on the head of this pin, on my hand, you know, all around us, we've been taken down to the local street and burned. When the microscope came along, everyone could see, my God, there's an entire ecostructure, you know, whole forms of life, a biosphere that we couldn't see with a physical eye. Well, above the level of the human is the macrobes. These are entities, beings that overlook us. They exist just in the same way as the microbes do, above our level of continuum. The instrument, there is no instrument physically for understanding that they're there, but except the human intuition. The human imagination, the human intuition, and of course clairvoyance know all about what I'm saying. We sometimes get, you know, fleeting glimpses of, even ordinary people will sort of get it, but it'll be so, you know, like on drugs, a lot of people, unfortunately, blow open a door to this and go, what the hell is this? Well, a lot of stuff on drugs is this. You are being awakened to this. But, of course, you don't know what you're seeing, and then you think you're going crazy. But the magicians know all about this, that these oversouls exist. And when John Dee and Sir Francis Bacon and many other people who were involved in this were given these instructions, it had the greatest effect for our world because, remember, the macrobes do not work for free. They want something in return, too, in the pact. So John Dee and his cohorts are basically saying, you know, what is it that you want back? And the macrobes said that they wanted blood. They wanted ritual sacrifice on the earth because blood has certain occult properties. Cortisol, the fear, you know, the energy of adrenaline that's released. This is what these entities feed off. Just in the same way that a local Satanist will skin a cat or sacrifice a frog, imagine that kind of a ritual taken up to the global level. And imagine the need of these descendants to get off this planet and, you know, do whatever they're doing. So John Dee in the 15th century, that's why I'm emphasizing this period of time, put up the entire planet as a blood sacrifice to the macrobes for this information. Now, sending people to die in these blood sacrifices is a little problematic. This is also why there's been massive wars and why certain wars are done at certain places, why soldiers are given occult symbolism to wear, why the centers of war, like the Pentagon and other institutions of war, are designed that way, why the Lockheed uses the five-pointed star, you see, There's a lot of symbolism involved that they're actually showing you that's an occult in nature. Using the five-pointed star involves this. And the symbols of the Maltese cross, the symbol of the pyramid in your cavalry days in America, they used to use the cross swords and the acorns. Wait a minute, acorns are druidic symbols. What are they doing on army? What are the oak leaf lapels doing on the German, Russian soldiers? The French wear the oak leaf symbol on their hats. The eagle, the skull and bones that was worn by the British Brunswickers. It was picked up by the Knights Templars. It was used by the Nazis. The eagle has been used by the Romans. You know, there's occult symbolism being used here because ritual death doesn't mean just blowing somebody away and then they're dead. It's very specific. You have to declare the war at a certain time. You have to send those ritual victims to a certain place on the earth. Most of the wars have been conducted at certain places of the power grid, at certain specific times. Same thing with assassinations. This particular concept of the blood rituals is very, very important to get into. I talk a lot about it in the book, that there is a reason for the mega death, for the assassinations that have been happening all over the world. Did you know, for instance, that in Egyptian, the symbol for the star Sirius, because in occult mythology, that star that you see everywhere on the American flag, all over the flags of the world, is actually, and if you read their own works, they'll be happy to tell you this, that is a symbol of the star Sirius that they worship. Well, in Egyptian hieroglyphics, if you wanted to write the symbol for the star Sirius, you used three basic shapes. You used an obelisk, which is like a pillar. You used a five-pointed star, and you used an oval. Right? That's the hieroglyphic for the planet, for the star Sirius. What do you find in concrete in Washington, D.C.?
The Washington Monument, right. The Oval Office, and the Pentagon.
And the other symbol that's often used was the serpent. And that was the layout of the streets. So why would a city in America, designed by Freemasons, the cornerstone of the monument, the Capitol building, the seven major structures, if people read about this, they will find that the Masons were involved from Point Go. The very dropping of the stones was done at sidereal time. You know, there's an immense symbolism used in this. The landing on the moon, the so-called free country didn't know that Buzz Aldrin, half an hour before they set up the American flag and started the cameras rolling, they pulled out a big Masonic banner that had been embroidered by the chief of the Temple of Lodge in Washington, D.C., and did an entire elaborate Masonic ceremony dedicating the moon to the Masonic order first.
No,
absolutely.
How can that be proven?
It's not only proven, it's declassified now. It's fact. Buzz Aldrin has admitted it. It's not maybe on the radar of the mainstream, but this is documented evidence. You go to their own works, the Library of Congress. This information can be found that I'm talking about is partly covered by David Ovison in his book, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. Buy that book. The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital will go into an account of that. That's one area where I know this was covered. The idea of even the eagle has landed. What eagle? Well, we associate that with America. But no, the eagle that they're talking about is the double-headed eagle of Freemasonry. It's not the American bald eagle. The eagle that they're talking about, the Freemasons understand, is a different eagle. That's the double-headed eagle of Freemasonry. Okay? The Pentagon itself is if you soften the edges of the Pentagon, it is the symbol of the Tudor Rose. There's actually a very similar, if you put the Pentagon and the Tudor Rose beside each other, they are very similar in fact.
So,
and of course, everyone knows if you put the arms back on a Pentagon, it becomes a pentagram, right? A giant pentagram in Washington, D.C., an occult symbol where these engineers of war involve themselves in their vast rituals.
We flew to the moon. I mean, we used technology to fly to the moon. It wasn't great technology compared to today's
standards.
I don't believe
that. I'm a person who totally does not believe that we ever went to the moon, and that whole thing was completely fictional.
So you're one who subscribes to the belief that we never landed on the moon.
Right. I think we've landed probes on it, unmanned probes, certainly. I believe we've even gone up there to certain heights. I do believe that, as I've said, that we've had technology and sort of spacecraft type things that can go up there. But landing on the moon in the way that was portrayed to us with these Apollo missions, absolutely not. In fact, I've done a lot of work on that. In the DVD, I cover that on Atlantis, that it's impossible, certainly in the crafts that they've shown us, in the shuttle crafts with the thin walls, to pass through those radiation belts. I have information on that. And I'm convinced, in fact, of it. And there's also been a very long set of tapes. It's at least 4-hour show called What Happened on the Way to the Moon. which is widely available. There's also a book that came out, which is by top scientists, called Dark Moon. It's available. It only came out last year, I think, called Dark Moon. There's a book by a man who worked for NASA called Moon Gate, which goes into it. So I have a whole list of sources that are written by insiders. Again, very people in the highest echelons of the NASA project who also now confirm these are whistleblowers, you see, who are...
So then what did then Buzz Aldrin plant the flag on?
You see, these individuals were exactly... They were imagining that they were there. A lot of these people were under either mind control or they were complicit in this act. Performing the ritual... Now, once you have now presented this act to the world, you have to go through the motions.
Sure.
Right? I mean, recently there was even evidence on the web that showed that some of the photograph, the photography that was taken could not possibly have been on the moon from a photographic standpoint. I mean, this is a whole other subject we're getting into.
Yeah,
I'm not the expert on it, right? But
sure,
there are people who are experts on photography who know that the shadows and the alignments and, you know, the crosshairs just couldn't be factual of the landing on the moon. It's preposterous. And if you start getting into it, you'll find that that's true. The most thing that interests me is the concept of the radiation belts that exist up there. And
You mean around the moon?
Yeah. You know, before that, the radiation belts of the stratosphere and ionosphere, to penetrate those in crafts like what we have is not, in fact, possible.
Yeah, but we've filmed flying over the moon.
Hey, we've made, we've also made the movie Stargate and Terminator 2 and all of these incredible movies that you can duplicate anything now. And to imagine that Industrial Light and Magic and Steven Spielberg are the first people to have access to that kind of technology is nonsense.
Okay, so now this is where you're possibly losing me a little bit, because has any manned mission outside of the Earth's atmosphere then is not a reality? Is that what you're saying?
I'm thinking that when I've looked into this, I think that they have a way to fly up there to a certain height, but I don't think they're able to penetrate the ionosphere and go up to the moon if they're manned. And that's why I believe there's a lot of emphasis on cloning now, on cyborgs, on virtual reality, of trying to maybe create robotoid beings that can, you know, go and do that. I even believe that, you know, in the paranormal movement, the idea of the little gray, that very famous image of the big bug eyes and and the very slow walking, I actually believe that those are also what I'm talking about. They're maybe semi-organic, but they're actually computeroid. I think they're controlled by people on the Earth. They're put out there for disinformation purposes. And based on the way that they react when they are seen, I believe they're remote control type beings. So I believe there's experimentation in Area 51 to try and make a kind of a hybrid, you know, semi-organic computer type robotoid individual that might be able to go and do certain work in an advanced way on the moon. But nobody has been there. Nobody has been beyond it. Because if they had gone to the moon, they would have now gone beyond that. By now, they would have already had a manned mission to Mars, or at least outside the, you know...
Why was it so exciting for a brief while and then just disappeared? And now you've
That backs up what I'm talking about, because they haven't done it. It was a scam. They know now that the technology, the alternative technology to prove that it was a scam, is too advanced. See, if you... the leading people that were behind the original Apollo missions, it's their work that I'm talking about that is now whistleblowing, saying it didn't happen. It's fascinating. And they know now that independent laboratories, independent researchers, even guys like yourselves, can now, through photographic means, prove that it's a lie. So they don't want to reduplicate it again, because it's more easy to prove now that it's bogus. So this has been an elaborate bogus thing. I mean, Professor Oberth, who was brought here under Operation Paperclip, along with Wernher von Braun, right, who was one of the heads of the space program, the creator of SDI, was telling the Americans then, we'll never do it. His own words are saying, it cannot be done. We have tried it in Germany during the Nazis. We had all the money thrown at us in the world. We had the greatest scientists you can imagine. We didn't do it then. We can't do it now. Even if 50, 100 years went by, we cannot do it. They said, yeah, don't ever say that. It's a whole pretense thing we got going here. And assassinations have been committed. You know, I have to stop people doing this. So, yeah, Rich, when you're talking about Buzz Aldrin and the act of it, that's ritual. That's different. The ritual act of it is a performance like any actor going and doing a role. You're either mind-controlled to do it, or you're in on the game and you're doing it. That's a whole different issue than the factuality of whether it's actually been done or not.
But isn't it easier to say that it was a mind-control thing than it is to find a way to prove that what we, in a cultural sense, believe is true, isn't?
Yeah, but see, it depends what you mean by easy. Is it easier? To go up against the mainstream is hardly easy. To go against what is the consensus trance of the human race is not easy, in fact. We have to understand how these secret societies work, how they go about their business. Remember, they do plan to leave the Earth. So plan A is to send their own life forms up above. What we're talking about is they want to do it. But when they realize they can't do it, they create dummy programs to get the people to warm up to the idea, oh great, we're going to go out and discover space. Because they know that solar observators and even your amateur homegrown, astronomer, mm-hmm. is going to be looking through his telescope, seeing all of this action. You can't hide it. I mean, you're sending stuff up. So they have to come up with an alternative plan to say, what are we going to say when people all around the world with these damn telescopes they've got, you know, little grandma or little 16-year-old Johnny out there, you know, amateur astronomer, is seeing our crafts go up. We got to have a couple of cover stories. We're going to say that the ones that look like UFOs are, oh, they're not us. They're coming in from outer space. My God, we might be being visited, and create that whole dynamic. Then we got to, when they see other legitimate things like the shuttle that might have been taken off, they go, we can't really hide that. Okay, let's create a fake space program and say, aren't we wonderful? Explore to the moon. Get Kennedy to say some numbskull stuff. Throw millions of dollars at it. And everyone will just go back to sleep, which is exactly what they've done. Now, under the cover of those stories, they can basically experiment as they're doing now, semi-openly. The original story was a makeshift fabrication. A Hollywood concoction, actually. And they say that whistleblowing is even done in Diamonds of Forever, the James Bond movies. We've now analyzed who these people are behind the James Bond movies, who Albert Broccoli and these people really served. Well, in a lot of these movies, and that's not the only one, there are many movies that show whistleblowing effects. In fact, in the movie Diamonds Forever, there's a scene in there where they're actually mimicking Wernher von Braun, one of the people that he's meant to meet in there. If you know how to decode the movie, they're actually whistleblowing. And one of the characters, there's a head scientist working on the project there for the dark side, the dark secret society, is in fact meant to be Wernher von Braun. And there's this whole little dynamic going on there showing that they're actually a simulated moonscape. And this thing, you know, this thing is a whole facade. And Moonraker, another one of the James Bond movies, in Fifth Element. I mean, the list of Hollywood movies goes on. I'm not in the right mood right now to think of them, but I've got lists of these movies that go into detail about some of the things that are happening, you know, with this program, the space program.
Wait,
that are whistleblowing.
I've seen the movie The Fifth Element many times. How is that whistleblowing?
Well, without looking at it, as I said, I'm not in the right mood to go into it, but I know that movies of that ilk, especially the remakes of a lot of George Lucas stuff, the Star Wars, mm-hmm. you see, within these movies are whistleblowing facts. They're given over to us in a certain way, because in ritual, in occult ritual, you're meant to tell your enemy, tell your victim what you're doing. It's a game of chess. That's why you have checkerboards in Masonic lodges. Because they're playing a game of chess with us. And in that game, in that ritual, there are certain rules that apply, even to secret societies. In fact, the secret societies are entirely ritualistically based, by the way, because that's just the way they are. And one of the rituals is that you must tell your victim or your patsy what you're actually doing. But you can tell them that in a fictional way, you know, sort of hidden in plain sight. And that's what they do through the films like Stargate and The Fifth Element. And other films that, like what was that, Independence Day, which are huge, there's so much secret society symbolism in these films. Enemy of the State, the one I'm thinking of was with Bruce Willis, but certainly they've made Apollo movies. You know, they've made the comet thing, the whole fear, paranoid society bit where you're going to be hit by a comet tomorrow and all of this stuff. You know, utter nonsense, because now there's no Cold War per se. The money has dropped back of funding those programs ostensibly, because remember, the lower rank and file who are not buying into this or don't know anything about the secret agenda, they'd worry and go, wait a minute, why are we still working on this crap? So you need another scare, another fear. Because what we're talking about is at the top of the pyramid there's those in the know, but everyone who works within these fields is not in the know. I do not believe that 99% of the people who work in NASA or in the Pentagon are even aware of this. They are genuine people doing a genuine day's work, thinking that they're protecting their country and, you know, whatever they're doing. That's the beauty of this orchestrated system of hierarchy that exists.
So how does it fit in that Japan and China and the United States are all currently talking about traveling to the moon in sometime within the next decade?
Because that's part of the plan. The groups that I'm talking about, these secret societies, are not national. They're transnational. They literally call themselves a trilateral commission. You know, they control all countries. They've controlled Japan for years. They control China. They control communist Russia. Communist Russia was their creation, if you get into it. So China, being a communist country, is controlled by the same bankers from New York, the same hidden hand from England, These guys have owned these countries, by the way. This whole fictional history drama that's been going on for 11,000 years is a concoction. It works somewhat.
Now, some people would argue that China and Japan actually own a large portion of us.
They, in fact, do, and that was always meant to do. The Sony Corporation, which actually stands for Standard Oil of New York, which was owned by J.P. Morgan and the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, moved in. Remember the bomb that was dropped in Nagasaki? And
yeah.
They'll even admit that that bomb didn't really need to be dropped, but yet it was. Because the plan was to drop it. The plan was to wipe out the economy of rising Japan on its own at that time, so that it would be wiped out, so that the American companies and the people who control the American companies could move in there and create this later to be what we now know to be the so-called rival companies of Japan's economy rivaling America, to create another dialectic, another fear, this divide and rule, the cross and the crown symbolism, which if you study the secret societies, that's how they operate. It's the old checkerboard, double-headed eagle dialectical idea. You create the reds under the beds and you create the blues. You know, you create the Nazis and you create the, you know, the Russians. You create all sorts of divisions. You create Protestantism, but you have to have Catholicism. You know, all down through the years, their own documents will tell you this. My work does not stretch, does not veer away, really, from anything that is in their own documents that show you how they do it. I've got the quotes from their own henchmen, their own thinkers. They tell you exactly how they're doing this, how they operate. It takes a little bit of study to realize that they do things in a certain way. But that's just like studying any criminal. Once you find out how this criminal operates, all becomes clear.
So what about the internet then?
Internet was created by the Pentagon, as you know, as the military establishment. And as again, you see, you can all down through the years, they've put certain things in front of us that we can also use to our own development. After the Second World War, and certainly even after the First World War, but very much after the Second World War, ordinary man that had been their underclass had suffered so much that by now, after the Second World War, there was a worldwide fever of revolution. Man was striking back. In order to offset that, they knew they had to pacify them. Because remember, they are few. We call them hidden and secret because there's a reason for that. They're hidden because they're weak, ultimately, and there's very few of them. So they stay hidden because they don't want people to know about them, because we'd destroy them, we'd wipe them out right away. They're very fearful. When the poor, wretched, you know, soldiers were coming back seeing their whole villages wiped out, all the deaths and carnage, you know, they weren't going to stand for this oligarchy. You're not going to come back and then see these lords and ladies, you know, in their expensive estates. So the oligarchy of the West knew, we're going to have to change the game plan here. Let's offer them some crumbs from our table now. And so it's exactly after the Second World War that you have the rise of the so-called socialist, right, liberal governments and their so-called, you know, welfare plans and, you know, whatever. Yeah, okay, I guess in history we can say fantastic. But you know what that is? That's nothing but crumbs off their table. And one of those things that we were given to pacify dissent, to pacify the possibility of worldwide revolution, was the privilege of education. Just like in the southern states here, when blacks were first let into the universities and the white guys are standing there with their arms crossed going, hey, we don't like this. Think of that anger and that contempt manifested many times with the upper elites of the world, you know, suddenly having to open the oaken doors of Oxford and Cambridge and, you know, Trinity and watch ordinary men and women's daughters, farmers, you know, tradesmen, artisans coming into those halls. They didn't like it, but they were told from upstairs, you're going to have to do it. Because we will be wiped out otherwise. This mass will rise against us. And then they were also told, don't worry. Just because we've opened the doors and physically let these people in, doesn't mean they're going to learn anything. We still are in control of them. We'll still teach them. They'll still ingest whatever, you know, diet of lies. Right? In fact, we may even have more control over them. Because now we're offering you a privilege with one hand. What better way to even get complicit people? Now, the internet falls under that category. Certain things that have been beneficial to us, like the privilege of education, like certain amount of expertise with technology. One contingent was very threatened by that, thinking, that's the last thing you want to do is arm them up and let them know. The other side said, don't worry, because we'll hide it in plain sight. And anyway, what are they going to do? Now they're in our fraternities. The universities and colleges are fraternal in nature. They're degree oriented. So if we find anybody who's a little bit too much, they're not going to go anywhere. They went, okay, it'll work. And so it has for the last 50 years. Because if you think back, even your father, maybe even your forefather, never even went to school. That's certainly the case in my country. So we are only beginning to be an opposition, quote-unquote, the human race. A lot of people I work with and who write books on this subject are always very pessimistic, thinking, oh my God, these people have been ruling the world for 100 years. What are we going to do? We forget that we are only now actually in the even the remotest chance of offering forth, you know, a proactive opposition to these forces that have controlled the world.
A proactive opposition to what and
to
how?
To the secret societies and to these oligarchical plutocratic forces that have governed us from day one.
Well, but how do you oppose opposition if you can't necessarily see the opposition as being there?
Well, that's the whole thing. My work is very much dedicated to identify the enemy. That's the first stage. When you have a pathogenic force in your body, a virus or a disease, you have to diagnostics is necessary first. And I'm a big believer in that. My work, a lot of the work of the people in this field, is purely diagnostic. First, we identify the enemy and say, here's how it happened. Here's how this infection got into the bloodstream. I mean, you're sick. You're psychotic. You've got all these problems. Our civilization is crumbling. The Earth is dying. We've got genocide. We've killed most of the decent, you know, races of the world and their great knowledge of how to survive in catastrophic times. We've got the evilest of people running our Federal Reserve and running the money systems and the world banks. Absolute mass murderers. The coldest-blooded, you know, psychotics we've got ruling the world. We put them there. They have dumbed us down. We are now constituting... See, they have given us the privilege of education, and so a few people have used that properly. Not a lot, but a few have become good investigative journalists. They have read the histories of the world that have been hidden from them. They are thinking about really grassroots ways to fight back, and not in the political pigsty that's been designed for you to come in and do that, right? I mean, that's the whole dialectic they've created. There's other ways to do it outside of that, because you don't go into the pigsty they created dialectically. That'll get you nowhere. But again, I refer in my work directly to the horse's mouth, to the great people from even within the secret societies of the world. For instance, let me read you just one quote from the head of the Illuminati, if I can find it here. Yeah. The Illuminati was created in the 1776, same year as America was founded. America was founded July 4th, 1776, but in May 1st, 1776, in Bavaria in Germany, the Illuminati, which is one of the most powerful steering committee secret societies, was created. The leader of it was called Adam Weishaupt. When he passed away, the mantle passed on a couple of generations down until it came to the American Albert Pike. Now, everybody in America needs to know about Albert Pike. He's one of these, again, overworld figures that most people don't know about. You know, we always see the Bushes and the Cheneys and the Roosevelts that are put in front of us. But we don't see those thinkers whose agendas are actually being acted out. Now, in his own work, in a letter to the previous leader of the Illuminati, Albert Pike writes this. He says, "We shall unleash the nihilists and atheists. We shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, origin of savagery, and the most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere the citizens obliged to defend themselves against a world minority of revolutionaries will exterminate these destroyers of civilization, and the multitude, disillusioned with Christianity, anxious for an ideal, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer." So these are the Luciferians communicating in letters one to the other, and I've got volumes of this information, literally talking about how they're going to do it. In Zurich, over the headquarters of World Freemasonry, the headquarters of World Freemasonry is in Zurich, Switzerland. If you go to this place, which happens to be right near the World Bank and, you know, the human rights courts and whatever, and over the door of the headquarters of World Freemasonry, it says in Latin, Ordo ab Chao, which it means order out of chaos. All Masons know that term. That's exactly what he's talking about. We create the chaos. We create the assassinations and the murder and the paranoid society and this food's going to kill you and this virus is on its way and there's terrorists outside the, you know, hiding behind the next tree. And they actually, they don't just talk about it. They do it. They create it. They fund it. Bin Laden and all these people are funded by the Carlyle Group, to which Bush and all these people belong to. Every so often they have another, you know, genie out of the bottle that's going to scare everyone. They do this because they're pushing their New World Order. There's many facets of this great movement, and tracking it is an awesome job of how they do this. And they want to get rid of the world states and replace it with what they have right now, which is the coming of this New World Order, because it has to do.
Don't you think, though, and to sidestep technology, don't you think nationalism will get in the way?
Nationalism does get in the way, because, again, it means a coming together of lots of people. They don't want that. They want separate. They want people to be fighting each other. You know, divide and conquer, divide and rule. It's the old British game, and they're doing it the same. They refer to it by the term the cross and the crown, the two forms of control that have always kept man in subjugation. the cross, which is religious, mind control, meaning psychological, and then the autocratic, the crown is the autocrat, the boss, the state, the governor, the king, the baron, who tells you, you're not going to go 10 miles from your feudal village. Just not so long ago, a man couldn't even get on a horseback and go 10 miles away from where he lived in feudal times. You know, when I'm doing a lot of these talks, people always get up and say rightly, you know, oh, wait a minute now, come on, how can some secret society just come in and take over? It's preposterous. Well, first of all, that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about some sort of mafioso slash, you know, IRA secret society, you know, comes in and takes over. These individuals have been millionaires from the first centuries AD and before. They created the cities. They created the idea. Nothing could have been easier for them. Agricultural man was the most controlled creature you can imagine. The barons and the lords and the abbots and the clerics, they told him what to think and what to do every move. And that's just recent history. There was no question of it. There's nothing could be simpler. And that's why their agenda is unfortunately moving ahead rapidly.
Now, one of the things that I think that you mentioned was the Mayans predicting the end of the world.
Right.
So how does that fit into all of this?
That brings up this interesting stuff about what's coming and why the Mayans were so emphatic about talking about the last 13-year countdown. And they're, for those who don't know, in their calendar, they have an end date where everything just stops. There's no predictions. There's no mention of anything happening after 2012. So people have, you know, sort of questioned, what does that mean?
So, I mean, that could mean that everything's over in 7 years.
What I think is it means that the world as we know it is going to sufficiently pass away. Not the world itself. The world that we know it politically, militaristically, sociologically. Yes. In fact, we already see...
Technologically.
We already see that happening. All the saber rattling, the rise of the American empire, you know, the Wolfowitzes and the concept of the neoconservatives. This is all part of this. And if you read their own works, you'll see that they're definitely heading this. They want to subjugate the planet. The secret society control moved from the Europe over to here, to the New World. And then now it's stretching out again to create an empire over there. So yeah, many of the idioms that even our own fathers took for granted are already slipped away long ago. And there's the delinquency amongst the teens, their level of ignorance, for instance, and their just dependency on television and, you know, the rise in pharmaceutical dependency and all of that. I mean, it's rampant. So yes, we are heading to a countdown to, some people are calling it a countdown to extinction. Other people are calling it, no, it's a countdown to a higher form of awakening. Once we release ourselves from these pathogenic forces. See, I can't do my work with a pessimistic attitude. I have to believe that, you know, this awareness is because we're about to rid ourselves, with celestial help. There are higher forces in the world, spiritually, that are going to assist in this. But basically, it's a human issue. And we're going to find the way to uncover the fact that these individuals exist, that they've been manipulating the flow of history. They still are. They're going to move even faster now. And we are going to find the solution. At the end of the book, tying in with what the Mayans talk about, I speak about four possible outcomes.
Yeah, I didn't like... The end of your book was quite depressing, might I add. I'm someone who definitely tries to think positive, and I see technology as you know, a pathway to solution.
So do I. I agree.
Well, and the thing is, if we find out, if this is revealed to us, will we care?
See, this is...
Because we are. Right. Because we have become a society...
Of amnesiacs, yeah.
Well, and we have, like... Life is... I think the big reason that television and... pharmaceuticals are popular forms of entertainment is because life has become too easy.
You're right. It's the leisure class. It's the class, is what Gore Vidal calls the culture of amnesia. And and in fact, you're right, we don't care. Some do, some don't. The masses will never care. The masses have never cared. Like, do you remember in the War of Independence, how many people was it in America who stood up against the biggest tyrant of that age? King George III was the biggest tyrant. He had the mercenaries from Germany, from Holland on his back, coming over here to tell your American forefathers just 200 years ago what they're going to do. 3% of this country, you know, stood up and threw him back into the Atlantic Ocean. That's proof positive. What was everybody else doing? Shivering under the bed in fear, you know, waiting for it all to go away. So I'm not one of these New Age people who believes, you know, oh, we've got to awaken all our people all the time. That's never going to happen. You don't need to bother about it. People are pretty much not going to get it. They're going to go about their boring life the way they always have. This is an intellectual fight. This is a spiritual fight between agencies, principalities, is what the Bible calls it. And it's not, the ending of the book is not pessimistic. What it is, though, is I am very aware in literature and filmmaking or whatever you do not create a happy, cheesy ending so that people roll over and go to sleep. You know, my work ends with a bite. It ends with a cliffhanger because it's very important that people don't think, oh, well, good, after all this story, now we know somebody else is taking care of it. I wanted to leave it with a feeling that, no, this is the ending is not certain. There's four possible outcomes that I can think of after what I've reviewed, but it's very important not to roll over and go to sleep. Each person needs to take personal responsibility. The solutions are in the end of the book, and in the DVDs I go into them with more elaboration about what people can do. Some of that's obvious, which is identify the enemy, collaborate, legally empower yourself, use technology to advance this knowledge, because this is going to happen from the underground. Don't wait for Big Brother to go, hey, tell us all about it. You know, we'll give you millions, let's fund it and own you. No, it's going to be individuals on a grassroots level, just like it was here with the war in Seattle.
Bloggers.
Bloggers, moveon.org. You know, they say that there was more hits on MoveOn, on the independent channels during the war of Seattle than there was on CNN. That means that people are crying out for alternative information. There are, and again, don't worry about all of the people, you know, all of the time doing anything. It's not going to happen.
There are always going to be people who believe one thing and people who believe another. And you've presented, you know, a tremendous, I mean, obviously, I will say fringe, you know, ideas. And my hope in bringing you here was to, you know, talk about specifically and bring to the table the idea that technology just didn't happen. It had to start somewhere. And where did it start? And where were some references? And it's just interesting to hear that there were references that we may not have been able to describe as accurately had we not experienced them firsthand.
And I think that that's why I said that even if nobody else, you know, if people find it, and I can understand that sort of skepticism, but one thing is absolutely clear. This technology existed. If you accept that because the records are talking about it in the most verbatim way, most visceral way, then that already presumes that there must have been advanced civilization. I mean, you see, one thing leads to the other. And I am a person who's really researched this, not just from the mythological side, but from the scientific side. Some of the leading scientists, they're all sourced in my book and on the website. You'll be amazed at what has been discovered, what continues to be discovered. They've just discovered the little people. Just as after Lord of the Rings came out, there's these worldwide discoveries of these hobbit-type beings, you see. Mm-hmm. That we are now in the age when several things are going to happen. We're in a solution age. So some of this is going to be less preposterous. What's going to happen also, we're going to find solutions, and we're going to have a lot of the secrets of the human race being slowly uncovered.
Now, let me ask you this. It was kind of odd. You know, I find it's a fascination with the idea that, you know, there is life on other planets, you know, whether it's, you know, simple life or advanced forms of life. What's your take on Dan Rather coming out and doing that UFO special? Wasn't it Dan?
No, it was Ted Koppel. Peter Jennings. One of those. They're all the same.
They're all the same. Peter Jennings coming out and doing that UFO special a few weeks ago.
I didn't really track it because I was doing some other interviews and just I'm trying to work on a second book. So I didn't really follow it. And I've learned, you see, to not pay too much attention to this doublespeak Orwellian crap that they put out there to pacify people. I'm so sick of that double talk. You know, I'm glad that something's out there better than nothing. There have been Discovery Channel programs on some of the stuff that we've been talking about. Eric von Däniken has finally been vindicated, and the guy's got his own specials on TV, you know, sometimes hour length. Fantastic. Happy to hear that. Graham Hancock, who's a great English scholar, who's very much, his new book, Talisman, is a classic. You know, it's inching forward slowly. And the reason why it is because people are just not buying into what they've been told. There's just not enough. And some very important people in Hollywood and even other thinkers and free thinkers in America, even the intellectual set, are starting to wake up. You'd be amazed at the books that are written by people. And you'd read, these are people from, like Robert Sterling, who wrote the book The Shattering the Myths of Darwin, was the Observer newspaper, you know, scientific correspondent. I mean, this is the top-notch people. If you read his preface and you didn't say who it was, you'd think that this was a fringe person hammering the system. He's so fed up, you see, with the way it's done from the Royal Academy and the Royal Society and the lies that these people have told, the Darwinian fallacies that have been put before us by the Royal Society. But then you have to find out who the Royal Society was. The Royal Society came from the Lunar Society of Erasmus Darwin, which was a secret society. You know, that was connected to the Hellfire Club. So, you know, a lot of the think tanks that are put before us today, why does the Smithsonian Institute use a black sun as their symbol? Who created it was actually oligarchical forces from Europe that created your Smithsonian institute here. The kings of the world were involved in its founding. Hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff we need to understand. For instance, here's a very famous quote from Ronald Reagan. This was at the United Nations. He said, "If suddenly there was a threat to this world from some other species from another planet, we'd forget about the little local differences that we have between our two countries, and we would find out once and for all that we're really all human beings on this earth." That's a very famous quote. It's on many videos and talks, right?
I've heard it.
But what they do not tell you is the last couple of lines. That speech goes on to say, "And yet I ask you, is not an alien force already among us? There are only a handful of people who know the truth about this." And that was Ronald Reagan to a full session of the United Nations on September 21st, 1987. "Yet I ask you, is not an alien force already amongst us? There are only a handful of people who know the truth about this." Now, wait a minute. But that's right. Gorbachev let it slip through his translator that, you know, he was a member of a secret society. And that everything that he's doing, Perestroika, was endorsed by a secret society. They edited that, but it already came out. The alternative guys got hold of it. He mentioned that order by name. Ronald Reagan has made various slips. So then out comes, you know, whoever, Dan Rather, whatever, put something forward. We observe it all, because some of it's disinformation, some of it's not. At the beginning of the movie Highlander, because what I'm talking about has been put there before you, but it's been put in a right brain way, hidden in plain view, so we don't connect the dots. When you hear Sean Connery's voice at the beginning of the first Highlander movie, he says something fascinating. He says, "From the dawn of time we came." Get out this movie and you'll hear this over voice. It says, "From the dawn of time we came, moving silently down through the centuries, living many secret lives. No one has ever known we were among you till now." Remember I was talking about the whistleblowing?
Mm-hmm.
That movie, its subsequent follow-ups, the George Lucas movies. These movies contain information, memes, that are then transposed into our unconscious mind. They're not meant to be, you know, communicated consciously to the popcorn eater, but they're meant to be translated as meta-themes to the mind. Now, that's what I work on. People can argue about little specifics here and there. I couldn't care less about that, and I usually don't waste my time about it.
Well,
dealing with the meta-themes is the most important thing to grasp.
You bring up, you use the word meme, and I think the blogging world in general understands that term, and they use it quite often. Of course, marketers would know it better as viral.
And that's a good word.
It's what it is has been defined as. How do you think bloggers have played or can play, or maybe just begun to play a role in the media?
Okay, as an astrologer, I'm all for it, and I think it is the way of the future. In the Book of Revelation, when it talks about now this is astrology, so again, you know, I always put that in parentheses for people who don't know. But in astrology, there's something very important to do with the internet. In the Book of Revelation, when John is talking about the Battle of Armageddon, the ultimate fight, the end of the fight between these forces, he says that the Battle of Armageddon will be fought in the air. And it just sort of leaves that, you know, in the air. What the hell does that mean? Well, many people have translated it. In astrology, when you use astrology to translate the Bible, air means air signs. There's fire signs, water signs, air signs, and earth signs. Now, the air signs are Gemini, Libra, and Aquarius. Taken together, and we're meant to be moving into the age of Aquarius, the air sign. Aquarius rules advanced technology, cutting-edge approaches, innovation, and grassroots approaches. This is what the air sign Aquarius represents. So I believe that the internet is one of the ways that this Battle of Armageddon is going to be fought. If you just
online, are you? Right. You're not talking like EverQuest or something like.
I'm being graphic about it, and I'm purposely being, you know, fictional about it.
Sure.
What I'm saying is, you connect these. In my understanding, what is really being implied there, if you want to stretch the point, is that the Battle of Armageddon, this fight, which is an intellectual fight, by the way. See, it's not a fight of physical swords, and that used to be maybe hundreds of years ago on the battlefield. You'd meet your enemy, and there you have it. It's completely different today. It's an intellectual battle of spiritual understanding. The internet is an extension of the cerebrum. There's no doubt about that. If you get into the metaphysics of what the internet constitutes and the electromagnetics that involves it and the digital space and the fact that it's basically a magical thing.
Yeah, it's nothing there.
My God, there's nothing there, right? And the energy that gives it birth. And some of the symbolism it's used, like the triple W, which is the wave of Aquarius. You'll find a lot of Aquarian, Uranian symbolism. But the most important thing is, what's it for? Yes, it was handed to us again by the dark side. But this is just one of the ways that they do it. They kind of arm us up to see what these guys are going to do with this. A great deal can be done with it. Webcams, live stuff, conferencing, fact information, real time, you know, transmittance of energy.
Live streams of audio.
Right, exactly. And well, I'm very much into it. In fact, my work could not be done without the computer, period. Now, the one thing I'll add, because there's a what we call... When you deal with the astrological aspect, yes, you hear a lot about Uranus in relationship to the computer, but there's also a Piscean element ruled by the planet Neptune, and a lot of people haven't been able to decode what that is. I think it's to do with the third world. This contingent or demographic that we laughingly call the third world out there is the keeper of the kind of lost traditions that the West has lost. They've been disenfranchised, marginalized, and everyone just goes, well, that's a third world, isn't it? First of all, we don't even ask who came up with the terms first, second, and third world. I mean, we certainly didn't. Who would even think of the world in terms
actually,
like
what is,
that?
What is the second world? Because there really
is the second world?
World?
Well, see, the first world is them. We are the second world. The first world is the elites who come up with these ludicrous Masonic terms. Three is very important in life. The third world are those we can deal with. The Trilateral Commission, those whose pyramid is over the earth, right? If you count the circles or the compartments of the, you know, the NATO symbol, the United Nations symbol, you'll see it's 33 sections of the grid that you'll see, the 33rd degree. These are Freemasonic symbols. Now, these guys think of the third world. The third world is our salvation. But the third world, from a normal media point of view, has been completely disenfranchised and has really hardly any way of interacting with us, the Western youth or the Western mind, except for what? This.
Yeah, the internet.
Very soon, and it's already happening, on their little bicycles in Taiwan, they got the freaking computer up there on the handlebars. They have it in their own cafes now. It's becoming big. I am very much looking to that because I saw it before from an astrologer point of view. It's been predicted by many clairvoyants that this computer... Look at Tiananmen Square. When there was the communists locked down all the information, the normal portals of, you know, communication, they forgot this. And some guys were like, you know, hitting the Western newspapers and corresponding with Western journalists live, real time. And the government there didn't think about it. A big Leviathan like that didn't remember that, hey, people are, you know. And now you have miniature computers, iPods, all sorts of things going on. When we hook up to satellites and have other aspects, and the Wi-Fi is a really good invention. And there is a potential there, let's just put it that way, of total independence. And even when you're not that far yet, you still have the chance of communicating vast amount of brilliant information. And I believe that when the third world gets online, as we say, it's going to matter more than all the dudes in the West sitting home shopping on eBay. You know, that's not a really good use of the internet. We're in certainly early stages of the Uranian part of it, where it's just like, hey, great, you know. Remember when the train tracks, when Louis Stevenson... When they were finding out about trains, when they were first making the steam trains, the problem was that all the tracks were of different gauges. So they had, you know, they came up with a problem. They had to have a standard gauge. We're in that early stage now where it's like, hey, this is great. But it's just like, boom, you've got just so much stuff overkill. It's the old Uranian paradigm.
Yeah.
Eventually, some type of Saturnian order is going to come into this, which will help. And I believe then you're going to see this other phenomena. And I really do, this is my final sort of last prediction. I believe that the West is going to meet the East. That means those guys over there in the East who are still the poets, still close to their culture, still know how to make a basket and tie a knot, and still know how to dig an artesian well, you know, all the things we forgot, we're going to be able to get back in touch with those people who haven't forgotten all this. They're about to come on board. There's also going to be prevention of that, which is why some places like Sudan and others are being tyrannized. And the World Bank is going to try and make sure that that doesn't happen, but it will. From the Far East, from these outranged places, from certainly South America, you're going to be able to open portals. They're going to have their own websites. They're going to be visiting our websites. There's going to be a huge inclusion coming of the third world. It's going to move up through the internet to be the first world again. That's going to do what? It's going to enrich and empower, and even a better word, it's going to really... it's even inspire and enrich is too weak. It's going to be much more physical than that. It's going to be, you know, like permaculture, things that we really need to know, that we've kind of lost the secrets. Why reinvent the wheel? These characters know how to do it. There's going to be a linking of East versus West by way of the internet.
Michael, you've spent 3 hours and carried the show quite well. Yes, some people might say, well, you didn't really talk about technology, but I'd beg to differ.
Well, I think we did.
I think we talked about a kind of technology. Yeah, and really the impact of technology throughout the ages, as well as, you know, possibly where it came from. So again, Michael Tesarian was the guest here on the Chris Perillo Show, and if you want to find out more about Michael and what he does, I'd suggest swinging by his particular website, taroscopes.com. taroscopes.com. Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation is the name of his book.
I have a phone number, too, if
people want. Oh, sure, go ahead.
It's Seattle 206-527-2968. That's 527-2968. And there's an Atlantis page on the website. You know, there's a lot of information there on the links page. People are welcome to give me comments.
Yeah.
Or send me information. A lot of people send me information.
Oh.
Again, a collaboration. I know a lot about what I do because people who are in the field send me their own discoveries and findings.
That's very cool. Well, Michael, I have read the book. I can say that with honesty. It's not just lip service. I've read it, and as has Ponzi. I don't know if she got as far as I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was intriguing.
Thank you.
Causing me to think about things differently, and that's anytime, whether I believe it or not, it's always good to challenge that which I thought was true.
It's very important
in every case
to get your arms around all as much information as you can before you make a decision. The first job is to get your arms around as much of the information regarding a subject that's out there. That's just what I've done, is to provide some of this old, ancient information in a new light. It's all been there before. It's just presented in a new light.
Again, Michael Tesarian, Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. Check it out, seriously. Even if you think all this talk was just crazy, it wasn't. Just take a read and then decide whether or not, you know, you want to learn more.